Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Attack of Opportunity. Today, a very special guest, someone I've been keeping tabs on, someone that has actually inspired me, you know, with his work back in the day when I was nobody. I'm still nobody, but I still find Michael Hunt from Unmade Gaming inspirational because the man made Unmade Gaming's own company. And today we're going to talk about him shifting from the streaming world into the podcasting world, which I know a couple of things about. Michael, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thank you for having me. This is a super awesome opportunity. I'm happy to be here.
So, Mike, may I call you Mike?
Yes, please.
Skipping the obvious Porky's joke with your full name of Michael Hunt, we'll just roll right over that. The first question that we always ask our victims here on the show today is, how did you first know that you were a geek, a gamer, a nerd, one of us?
White privilege. I was like 5 or 6 and I had an Intellivision. So I was, 1987 was born, and I was, by the time I don't think I was in kindergarten yet. So I could barely read, and I had an Intellivision, which was like, if you had an Atari, the Intellivision was what your rich neighbor had. And my grandfather had bought that and was like, I don't know what this does. And he gave it to a child. So I played that and it had better graphics, I guess, if you could compare the pixels on a screen, the tiny blocks of men jumping up ladders. So I had that from an early age and I just started gaming from like the womb. I'm pretty sure I learned how to read on those kind of games. And then I think it was like RPGs on the console were what got me in, like the old school Final Fantasies, that kind of thing got me into like long form story combat. And then eventually that led to D&D, which I rebuffed for a long time. I got invited to play D&D probably when I was like 13, 14 ish. And my friend said, hey man, you like all this other nerdy crap. Do you want to play Dungeons & Dragons? And I said, hell no, I don't. That game's for nerds. And then I didn't play. And then he nagged me and nagged me and nagged me. And I was like, fine, if you're that desperate for an extra person to play with, I'll jump in. And now here I am. That's my job.
So, don't forget the metalheads, the smoking area burnout metalheads that also, you know,
yep, that's
made
true.
Their own swords and play barbarians.
Yeah.
You know, for a guest that actually didn't send the questions to like, you know, make you comfortable, you just burned through 3 of them.
Great.
We're on a roll here. But you know, I gotta say that like 8-bit gaming and 16 retro bit gaming is a thing.
Yeah.
Right now, it's such a thing. My son watches this Zelda speed run. Mm-hmm. Where they try to glitch the game and like they have like an audit, we're talking like a basketball sized auditorium full of people drooling,
so
watching this guy like glitch and just swim like mad across the ocean and try to get in the tower. And it's like, what is this?
Yep.
And he's like, oh, it's a speed game run, Dad. You know, okay.
Hmm. Yep. And here I am playing Burger Time on the Intellivision where you're just a chef with a bottom bun trying to catch the ingredients
Tapper where you'd slide the beer down the bar and all that stuff, right?
Like Q-Bert, all those awful games from our childhood.
my old man, first console we got actually was a VIC-20, which was the Commodore 64's stupid younger brother.
Yeah,
and we played
the
crap and all that stuff. Now, you mentioned 87. Did you say you were born in 87 or that
I
you
was
were 6 years old?
I was born in 87. I was born in 87.
Oh, okay.
And I guess my grandfather had bought it because he was interested in technology, but then decided that he was old. Granted, at the time, he was probably like in his 40s, but he just was like, this isn't for me, and just had an Intellivision. So like whenever I had the motor function to play the Intellivision, which was confusing because the controller was like a size of a brick. And the mouse pad basically was a disc you spun in either direction. And it had number pads to punch for like the objectives to do things. So once I had the motor functions to use this archaic tool, he was just like, here, play it, Mikey. And just hooked it up to the screen. And I was like, great. And that's every time I would go to their house, I'd just play this game nonstop.
So, that's cool. That's cool. It's 87. In 1987, picture it. All right. So two hours north of Toronto, a young Canadian boy obsessed with Russian, in the back of a car, 16 years old, and his bandmates are talking about Dragonlance novels. And, you know, I've told the story too many times. And, but 87 was the year I discovered gaming myself.
Nice.
Now, you led right in the questions about this right into, you know, being a gamer. So obviously, since you were 6 and RPGs. So it brings us right around to the big question is, what made you decide to start making your own content? What got you into, you know, being in front of the camera and the microphone?
Hubris. That's it. I am Icarus, and the YouTube is the sun. That's really what it is. So I deployed to Afghanistan in 2011, and I had the fortune of deploying with a friend of mine, and we found that on a different side of the base, there was a civilian there who was running D&D for the troops, which I was like, we're going to play. And so he had done a thing where he reached out to WotC and they were like, here, have a bunch of free crab. He reached out to LitCo. They were like, here, have a bunch of free gaming supplies. And so he was stacked up with gaming supplies and we played D&D 40. And that was the first time I had experienced like intense cinematic narrative style gameplay. Like before it was like, you're in your teens and 20s and it's like, we stab the guy, we take the money, right? Everyone's a murder hobo when you start playing. But this was like cinematic and like people were like feeling emotions and I was like, oh shit, this is D&D. Like this is role playing. And then that inspired me. We actually played in his massive homebrew world, which inspired me to make my own homebrew world because previously I had like made, you know, homebrew villages and homebrew adventures and that kind of thing, but I never made, you know, the world. And so I started doing that. And then I started consuming content on YouTube from people like Matt Click from A Fistful of Dice, Michael Barker from How to Be a Great Game Master, the Kearney brothers from Tabletop Terrors, all these people that were the start of the YouTube content creation scene, Dave from Nerdarchy, those guys. And then I came home and Matt Click had started the Provokers. And I think this was like 2014, maybe. He started the Provokers, which is like he grabbed a bunch of other YouTubers and said, hey, man, I'm going to play a game. We're going to use Google Hangouts. We're just going to role play. And so they did. And it was Google Hangouts in their office with like bad lighting, terrible microphones, and Google Hangouts. Every time you made a noise, the camera would switch to you for no reason at all. Whoever was the loudest person, that's where the camera would focus. And so it looked bad. It was a great game, but it looked bad. And I'm watching it. And I'm like, this is great content. It's terrible to watch. I could do this. Like, it can't be that hard to produce what they're making.
Yeah. And so that I sounds was like, familiar.
Yeah. And so I was like, sure, let's try this. And then a few months in, I was like, this is way harder than it sounds like. And my videos look like trash. and so it's been an uphill battle since that day. So yeah, August 2015, we were like, we're making the jump. And that was the first day, August 15th, 2015 was the first day we launched our very first episode live on Twitch, live playing, my homebrew D&D 5e world, and it was bad. It was bad. We had a webcam on a tripod 10 feet away from us to get the whole group of people. And it's me and my four other friends sitting on couches sideways, from an up down, like a downward angle. And we all just look fat. And we have our Yeti microphone in the middle of the group on a glass table. So anytime we rolled dice, your eardrums blew out. It was just terrible. It was a terrible content production.
Oh, I know, but you got to have that. Oh, those were the days.
Yeah.
You know, we still reminisce about our early first pod Star Wars days where we all had like Xbox headset mics.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and trying to figure a way around Roll 20 and all that kind of thing, but you know, good times. But you learn.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
As long as you know, strive to improve. But you know, there's a huge market for the sort of laid back amateur. You know, like just accept us who we are.
Yeah.
You know, there's a Yeti in the middle of the table. We're drinking and we're just, you know, and people dial into that. I feel I'm there.
Yeah,
and you know, we actually have.
Yeah, we actually have a few of our viewers from 5 years ago that were like, oh, this just looks like four nerds playing D&D in their basement. And that's what I did. And so that's how we got our first, like, you know, core group of people. And they're still here. They still hang out in the stream. They still come by and watch. They still are active in our community. And they're now some of my best friends, which is, you know, it's crazy to say. It's like the internet. It's like I've never met this guy in my entire life, but we talk all the time. So
yeah, me and my buddies are up here in Canada, but we've come very close to our American cast members. Frank Hamilton is actually going to come up to Canada next summer. We're excited to, you know, take him around and spoon feed him things like poutine and waffles and things that Canadians don't actually eat, just the world thinks we do.
Of course, yeah.
We were talking about picking him up in a limo. You know, like the VIP treatment at the airport.
That's fancy.
And get them all excited and then take them to some abandoned rat shit motel and just drop them.
Yeah.
Here you go, buddy. Welcome to Canada.
That's the way to do it. Right
middle here. Somewhere was like, you know, where the bears kind of scratch at the window.
Oh, yeah.
But this 5 year ago adventure, is it up on your YouTube channel? Like, is there still access?
No. So not that I don't want it there, but I don't want it there. What happened was we recorded that show for like some number of weeks, 3 hours a day, 3 hours a show for X number of weeks, like a full year. And then something happened with a hardware issue on my end, and the hard drive containing the first two seasons of that show got deleted. So now all I have is the third season, which has markedly better quality, but now you just don't have any of the first two seasons. And then that show ended, and I recorded another one for about a year. And that one, I have all of it on my hard drive. I just never bothered to upload it. And so every show after that one is uploaded. So it's funny, because I've been at GM for like 15 plus years. And so if you look on the channel, there's 300 and change videos, I think. 30 of them have me as the GM. I luck out where I get to be the player in the majority of these, because the longest runs of me being a GM were my own game, and they're not on the YouTube. So one day those will go up there. I'll just secretly upload them all and then just be like, go live at the same time. And everyone will be like, oh, where'd these come from?
I can't express how happy I am that we've got four new GMs and I don't have to do all the shows coming up. I get to play, and because I'm also running tech and editing and doing everything, and it's just like, you know, we didn't want the network to be the Jeff show, and it quickly turned into that in 2 years, and it's like it's hard to get someone to commit to be a GM, even amongst your friends, you know. Like, I'll show up on Friday and play, but you know, all that prep and everything, that kind of thing. So let's talk about you talked about your inspiration, you know, guys you're watching, and then you're like, I could do this, you know, you know, 5 years later, here you are. Where do you make your content? Like, where does the magic happen? Are you guys all around a table with that same Yeti? Or are you all online like our guys? Or, you know, what do you got going on?
So it started all around the table. And then we realized that the production quality was so bad. So we switched to talking head format like this, right? Where we're all heads in a box. Or I think the going connotation is Hollywood Squares, right? We all look like Hollywood Squares. So we switched from that content in the first campaign. The second campaign was all Hollywood Squares style because we could get better audio quality that way. So I'm still using the same original Yeti and the same original webcam from those days. However, the people that are now on the show, it went from being just my friends locally to we have people in England, we have people in Canada, we have people in, I mean, I role played with for like a year with Guy Sklanders from How to Be a Great GM. He's in Japan. So we had people all over the place, you know, both sides of the coast of America. So yeah, pretty much everywhere.
I actually know Guy. We had him on the show. I met him through Michael Kasevin. You mentioned David Fryant, who was kind enough to actually do an episode. I can't say I know him personally, but great bunch of guys. And they stream Saber Dice with Cody Lewis,
right,
and all those guys, you know. And they're the who you want to know, who you want to be, you know, for us wee lads getting going, and you know, that kind of thing. But a really kind bunch of people, because if they can't talk to you personally, you see it in their content. You know, they're not looking the camera in the eye, they're reaching out to the stranger gamer going, this is how I feel about this, and you know, let's go on this journey together. And you know, you feel you know them as soon as you see them.
And that's actually how I know them better is I was also on Saber Dice for like the last year of the existence of Saber Dice, as well as before that I was a GM on Saber Dice for their little, they had a sideshow with a few extra people, with like Ted from Eric E and a couple other people, Jordan from, I think he just changed the name of his channel, but it was the all the lore for Forgotten Realms. He did that channel, Jordan with the PH in the middle, and Wylock Games, the one of the crafting guys. So yeah, we had a little run over there, and then they were like, that was cool, come on the main show. And I was like, all right, that's what I do every day anyway.
We're gonna have to get you to drop all these links everywhere we can find you and follow Mike's journey as he went, you know, like, even if it's somebody else's, you know, owned content, you know, you gotta give me all these links. I'll put them in the chat, I'll put them in the you know, in the description, and we can follow your journey for the last five years, because that would be awesome. So right now, like now, how many different shows do you have? I mean, what do you got up and running?
Right at this second, we technically have four as part of Unmade Gaming. So we break the year down into four seasons, you know, like the rest of the world does. Except in our seasons, we have three actual play tabletop games going at a time. So they last about 12 weeks, and then we have like a week off, and then we have 12 weeks and no week off in 12 weeks. Now, sometimes these games will go their 12-week run, and then we'll be like, second season, and then they go for another 12 weeks. Or sometimes they just rotate out, and then we have new games coming in. So right now we're playing an indie game called Monster of the Week, which is very much like Supernatural kind of thing. That one's really fun.
Rev from he does that one. Sorry, I just meant I am familiar with the Cindy system, and I'm hoping the fans are too. Sorry, please continue.
That's awesome. Yeah, and we're actually playing in that one in fake Toronto. We have a homebrew version of Toronto called Toronto.
Really?
Yeah. Well, our GM
How dare you?
our GM is from Toronto, so yeah, we have a Canuck for a GM. So we have that game going on, and then on Tuesdays we have a game. It's based off Monty Cook Games Cyber Systems, and we're playing in the Dark Crystals World of Thra. So we're Gelflings fighting Skeksis. Have you seen the new TV show?
I have yet to check that out.
We're playing post TV show pre movie. So like where the TV show ends, we're playing a couple months after the TV show ends. So like everyone knows that the Skeksis are duplicitous now. And so all the Gelfling clans have kind of risen up to try to figure out what the hell to do about it. This is before the movie where all the Skeksis have killed.
Do you get to role play like Muppet moves?
We don't. I do that in my regular life because I'm a Kermit the Frog, but not on screen. But yeah, we actually had Fizzgigs, the little dog creatures, pop up in the show. The GM was having a little fun role playing as the Fizzgig. So he's making like growly dog barking noises. And so while he's doing this role playing with someone else on screen, I'm over here secretly finding a GIF to overlay on his face live. So while he's unknowingly role playing and like barking and stuff, I have put a GIF of two Fizzgigs talking to each other in barks over his face live.
Please tell me there's a GIF out there in the world where in the original movie Fizzgig throws a tantrum and they just have him on the log. He's just like going his little log, right?
I think that's the GIF I used, if I'm being honest.
Dude, you gotta send me that. It's too much fun with that one.
Yeah, that's great. And then on Thursdays we have a game called Coriolis, which is a Swedish game out of the company Free League, which is my favorite company. And it's a space game, and that one's really fun. It's really fun and dramatic. And that's it for now. And then we have the podcast, which we just started recording, which we'll be launching in February, called Dark Fortunes, which is a D&D 5e pirate themed adventure set in the Humblewood setting. Which is like D&D, but all the characters are some kind of avian or like a fox or a deer or like, you know, they're all animal based, but they're like, you know, anthropomorphized animals.
I would say anthropomorphic gaming, yeah.
Yeah, so kind of like an Aarakocra, but like everyone is that, right? So like I'm playing like a crow, we have a fox, we have a stag, and we have a skunk. And we took that setting because we liked the world, we liked the lore, and we liked the characters, and we took that setting and said, nah. And then we moved like a couple hundred miles down the coast and made our own setting using that kind of rules. And now we're playing pirates because there weren't really pirates in the game to begin with. So we're like, you know what is fun? Pirates are fun. So we started doing that and kind of mixed it up with that.
You know, I'm going to break one of my own rules. Usually politics.
Sure.
Religion. And sexual preference are three topics I avoid, but there's been something bugging me about the whole anthropomorphic role-playing world is I feel they're getting a bad rep, that the ignorant internet person just automatically associates all of that with what is commonly known as furries and all that. And it's like, come on, like, who didn't watch Tailspin? Who didn't love Don Carnage? You know, who didn't watch like the
DuckTales or
DuckTales and all of that stuff? You know, we're all born on Looney Tunes and Bugs Bunny to a point where even in Wayne's World they were making jokes about rabbit in a dress kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And there's the what's the game or the cartoon with the mice and the medieval Redguard?
Oh yeah, Redguard, the books.
The Redguard books and everything kind of thing. And it's like it's just its own thing. I guess it would appeal, but it's like, come on. Like, talk about just taking too much stuff and putting it, dismissing it into a box. It's like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Zootopia with the con man. I love that movie. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
You know,
I will say, when you're looking for inspiration for character art, there's a real dangerous crossover between those two. They intersect on Google quite a bit. but for us, we have like a Redguard kind of... It's Redguard meets Pirates of the Caribbean, right? Where the fact that we're animals is ancillary to the main story, right? And that's one of the things I think that Humblewood tries to drive home, is that it's not... You're not an animal... playing, you're not an animal who's a pirate. They're people. So in the world, there are still other animals. Like they keep pets. You're just a race of people that look like animals, which is kind of cool. So it's a similar kind of thing. How Onyx Path does Pugmire, where like it's rude. Like Pugmire is an RPG that you play a dog, an anthropomorphized dog, but it's rude culturally to do dog-like things, right? So like in the game, they're like, don't smell butts, because dogs do that in real life, but that's like super frowned upon in the game lore. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I like how they like harkened back to like the days of, like, I guess the story is like something mutated the dogs and all the people are gone. And so now the dogs view man as like their god. So like their 10 commandments are to like man, which is kind of funny. Like, but yeah, all the dogisms that we see now, they're like, that's frowned upon because we're not dogs anymore. We're civilized people, which is like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. You're not supposed to be walking in there acting like all dogs go to heaven or the life of pets, where you are a pet that talks to a pet and you go through all those stereotypes. It's something completely different.
Yeah.
But so kind of really peeling back layers in this Pandora's box. So we're going to let that go. but let's talk about, you yourself, your cast as well, but you yourself, like, do you attend conventions, gatherings, you know, where can fans meet you? And if so, you know, whereabouts?
Yeah. You can come to my house. My address is below. No. So at a minimum, every year for the past couple of years, I've been going to Gen Con. I'm there all 4 days. I'm usually there like 6 days. PAX Unplugged, I will be there. That's just a short drive away. So one's in August, one's in November. I think it's in November, October. It's November. And then this year is the very first Nerdarchy the convention, hosted by Dave from Nerdarchy and the rest of the Nerdarchy crew. That'll be in just outside of Philly proper. And that's in October. That's on Halloween weekend. And I will be there because I'm the Twitch coordinator for that. So I'll be working with a bunch of other people to like help host and run events for that. But those are the three you can always see me at. I'm trying to work in Origins as well. But that's out in like Wisconsin or whatever. So that's a little bit more expensive, to fly that far. But, yeah, so the major ones, Gen Con for me and PAX Unplugged are the two like biggest ones. So, yeah.
Right on. But an easier way to find you, social media, like what outlets can we find you on, popular social media, and where?
Yeah. All of them. So I'm on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Twitch. I think that's all of them.
No, is there a specific way? Like, if you just type Michael Hunt into Facebook,
if you type in Unmade Gaming on Google, you'll find me. I'm the first 10 links or so. Yeah, so I'm all those things at Unmade Gaming. And I think, 100% of the time you're talking to me. There's no one else that has access to those anymore. So yeah, 100% of the time you are talking to me on any of those social media sites. In the comments on a YouTube video, that's me. On Reddit, you'll see my posts go up there. I'm Unmade Man there. But yeah, you can find me pretty much anywhere that social media is at Unmade Game.
I wanted to give a quick shout out to, now usually my hunting grounds for guests is Twitter. The Twitter gaming community is very friendly. But there are those like, Lewis from What You Do, you know, who gets people together and, now, and I'm also talking about on Facebook, there's Cody Lewis, who you know.
Yep.
I haven't had really the pleasure, except a very quick phone call, but that's another story. He was desperate for some players, and everyone in the cast were like reaching out going, hey, you know, and I was like, oh yes, please, I'll play, you know? And it's like, you know, 5th E? I'm like, no. So I play Pathfinder. Oh, that might be a problem. But he has a website. He's made a page on Facebook. And this is where I found you.
Yeah.
Because you were posting about your new show.
Yeah.
And so I just want to hats off to those in the community that go to the trouble, besides their busy schedules, to make a Facebook page, to run a Twitter account that's about getting the community together, which far overshadows this sort of one-on-one approach that I have, where I'm trying to show the community a behind-the-scenes look and make them more comfortable with content creators like yourself after I burned through my own cast and all that kind of thing. So hats off to these guys. And I'm sorry, I can't remember. It's got the Internet...
The Internet Role-Playing Creators Association.
IRCA. Right, thank you. Yeah. I always get it backwards. So shout out to those guys. You're doing great work. Great job. And even the lurkers, like myself, that just scroll through it, don't make a lot of comments from time to time, can connect with really cool, interesting people, other content creators like yourself. And I just want to give a tip of the hat, because I don't think that these guys get their due, thank yous.
It's a great little program. And I joined into that, and I've made a bunch of friends there. like I said, I posted that thing, and I got a few replies, yours included, and it's been great so far. I have a thing with Bill Allen coming up soon from that same kind of post. Jake Norman from MTV. So that's going to be really cool too. So yeah, it's all about making connections, and we as content creators often build communities around our content, but not for other content creators. Which, tying this back into the previous question, if you're at Gen Con, I run a similar thing to the IRCA at Gen Con, where I do a creator meetup. There's a bar, an undisclosed location, at Gen Con on an undisclosed day. Whereas if you are a content creator and you get in touch with me, I will give you this information. And last year we had like 100 and change people for like, we took over the entire bar. So every year that we've hosted it, it's grown. It's almost doubled every year. And it's just really a fun time. It's like, because all the content creators, we exist on the internet, right? That's why VidCon is a thing, so that other content creators can mingle with other content creators and their viewers. So yeah, this was a creator event only. And so it was all kinds of people from the YouTube space, the podcast space, the Twitch space, all just kind of mingling and meeting face to face and getting some like, you know, talk time in with each other. It was just over drinks. And it was a great time. Yeah.
Yeah. Like tips and tricks. Like before we aired this, you know, you and I were back and forth about tech issues and our experiences and stuff kind of thing, you know, cause you gotta share what you know. Yeah. And the other guy's like, oh, well, what about this? Do you know about this? You know, talking about programs and all kinds of, you know, type of thing, and you know, over drinks.
Yeah,
that sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's a great networking event. I know shows have been born out of it. I know, like, you know, interviews and crossovers have been born out of it. So yeah, it's a really cool thing.
Right on. But you can't always get to the States. Like myself, you know, we're up here in Canada, crossing the border is a big pain in the ass right now. So for someone like you to sort of take that chance, put yourself out there, and just, you know, slam and, you know, hate to say it, spam these sites and going, hey, this is what I'm doing and I need people to take a look or help me.
Yeah.
You know, I get a lot of bad press about being spammy, and I just, it's not how I see it. It's just, I'm really excited about things that are going on and projects, and I approach people and everything. And if you just sort of post something anonymously, yeah, I get it. You look spammy. We do much better with, like I said, this one-on-one approach where it's like, oh, okay, yeah, he's harmless. He's Canadian. He's just really excited about his content. And, oh, you know, you didn't know that I could help you, put you on the show. And, oh, I didn't know this thing about the technical we were talking earlier back and forth.
Yeah.
But you can't let that kind of thing keep you down.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'll be the first to admit that when I bursted on the internet 3 years ago, I took a serious step left instead of step right because I didn't know what I was doing. I'm not saying that I offended people, but, you know, I found a lot of content creators and stuff were just kind of like, they were speaking to each other, and I'd raise my hand as politely as I could, and I just got a whole bunch of, who's that?
There's,
you know, he's just pro advert. It's like, well, you just talked about your show.
Yeah.
You know, I want to know about your show. Get talking, and then it's like, oh, here's my show. You know,
there's a weird dichotomy with internet creators. You find that people are either very insular, and that's the more, dangerous is too strong of a word, but I don't have a replacement for it. Where it's like, if you think, you know, if I send fans over or viewers or community members over here to this other people, I'm actually taking away from myself, which is never the case. And then there's the other side, which I believe is growing. It's a growing mentality, which is, you know, a rising tide rises all ships, right? So if I do better, I can be like, hey, go check out this other thing. And then now you like two things. It's not like you like me or this other guy. It's you can like about you. We're humans. We have a lot of cognitive
capacity.
You can like more than one thing.
Yeah. Rick Sanchez from Find the Path, the other Mummy's Mask, you know, the one that's doing really well, you know, and we're like, cool. You know, I turn to my guys, I'm like, see, I told you that adventure would be a good one. You know, somebody's doing it, you know, because we've had trouble getting ours going. But it's like, I know it's doing well, but, you know, good for him that he's, you know, he's got this going. I just want to see this stuff out there. When we started Age of Ashes, we really dropped everything to be the tip of the spear and launched our show at like a week in. And we were the first, and we're like, it doesn't mean we want to be the most popular or the only or whatever. No, there's like six up and running now. And we check them out, and we're like, oh, they're doing that with that. That's cool. Or, oh, look at this guy, you know, type of thing, you know. And we hope it's the same way with us. We hope people check out our show, not just fans deciding which is their favorite or which one to stay with, but other content creators that, you know, comment back and forth going, I like what you did here, or, you know, like, this is really a kind of a faux pas back and forth. And everybody learns, everybody grows.
Yeah. And that's the thing is like you, if you exist in a vacuum, you'll produce the same trash, right? It's the same kind of thing. Like if you didn't get comments saying, I really like this on your videos from viewers, then you wouldn't know to continue making that. It's the reason why we harp over analytics to find out like, oh, what did they like? Oh, when did they stop watching? Oh, here, what did I do here? Make them stop watching kind of thing. So if you don't have feedback from creators, from viewers, from community, from your mom, you'll never grow.
That's a good point. A lot of people mistake our hunger for views and likes as like an ego popularity. It's like, no, this is a mechanic where we can learn to make better content for free, by the way, for the viewer, because it's not free to us. You know, we're in debt up to our eyeballs for a passion. Like, not to boohoo this, but you know what I'm saying? Like, this is why there's great things like Patreon and stuff exists and merch and whatever. You know, like, this, we're already living the dream, people. We're already making the content that we love to make. We're already here.
Yeah.
Okay. But we go to work, we come home, we pay bills, and whatever free time we have, we make the content that we love.
Yeah.
We're already here. It's already up here for you for free, and we are already in debt. So the mentality of like, oh, he's launching t-shirts to make more money, or he's begging for Patreon. It's like, that's kind of like looking after some backlog of debt that we're carrying, guys. This is not, you know, trying to make us rich. Now, there are some who drop their job and can live off Patreon. And hey, you know, great. That is really, you know, a dream upon a dream kind of thing. But then again, you are taking on so much more work. You know, like these guys, you mentioned David Frant, and he's going to a castle to DM and you know, everyone's like, oh, well, that's so great. And $2,000 to get there. It's like, are you kidding me? I would sell a kidney to fund that just to go and you know, because you're just doing what you love to do.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit overdramatic about this because I came out of the 80s when gaming was still taboo. Before the 90s came around and Harry Potter and stuff made it cool for the normie audience or whatever, you know, it was a very uphill battle.
Yep.
But anyway, sorry. Speaking of merchandise, what about you? Do you have any merchandise? Fans can buy it and find it.
Kind of. I mean, I have it. It's out there. I don't promote it because it doesn't make any money. So if you really want it, it's if you really want it, I made it and it's there. Again, if you Google Unmade Gaming, I think it's probably like link 8 or 9. But it's you can get like our logo on a shirt and that's about it. We sold a handful of them. And I already had paid for the logo design, and it was free to slap it on a shirt. And I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. So no, we don't really do merch. We do have a Patreon, however, so you can support us that way. Or we're on Twitch, so you can subscribe via Twitch. And there's like different bonuses depending on where you are. I think Patreon obviously has the most bonuses for what you get. But obviously that has a steep incline for depending on what you want. I think the highest end is like I run a game for you and your friends. And yeah, that's really it. Like everything we put out is free, and we thrive on comments. Like I literally get alerts on my phone about the comments on YouTube, and then I see them, I screenshot them, and send them to the cast. Like we have a group chat for the cast, and then the cast goes, "Oh my god, this is so amazing!" So like myself, the producer, the player, and like oftentimes the GM. Like we thrive on this kind of content. When people are like, "Oh my god, this is the best space show on YouTube," I'm like that. There's so many space shows and you think this one's the best, either you haven't seen any or this show's good. It's one of the two. So, but we love it. We interact back and forth in the comments. Like the cast kind of jumps in sometimes and they're chatting back and forth and we get a couple on like Facebook, on Twitter and stuff. And we literally thrive. If I could eat comments, like that's, I would just quit my job.
No. It keeps you going, man. It keeps you going. Because like I said, you get some of the negative comments and even if they're being nice going, well, you know, he's heavy on the mic or you know, what's he doing with this? I'm not feeling it. It's like you carry that with you. And it's like we're already paranoid. Yes, a lot of our heads don't fit through most doorways because of egos. Yeah. But we're also inside real paranoid. It's like, you know, love us, please.
Yeah.
But it's I'm really kind of explaining this the wrong way. I'm kind of digging a hole here. But I agree with you. It's like a single comment on YouTube that you can share with your cast validates the trouble you go to put wife, baby, job, everything aside.
Yep.
Sure, you're having your own fun, but we could just hang out in the basement and play for fun, people. We are setting up cameras, buying internet feeds, buying hosts. You know, this is right, this is wrong. We got to set this up for you for free. There's a lot of trouble and pain in the ass involved to do that. And it's not about just going, yeah, I'm in front of the camera.
Yeah.
You know, no, there's a lot of work, blood, sweat, and tears that goes into this and constantly trying to make it better. So even a tiny little comment going, that's cool, love this joke, that really keeps us inspired where we can dig into a reserve of happy place and going, oh, it's worthwhile. Anonymous Bob really liked this, you know, type of thing.
Yeah. I think every 2 hour stream I do is about 5 hours of work, between the actual 2 hour stream itself and then editing the video for YouTube, editing the audio for Patreon, uploading all the behind the scenes YouTube stuff that goes on there, making the social media links. And that's just per episode. And I do three of those a week. And that's not to include getting the cast together, you know, getting the artists together to commission art for the things, you know, all those other things. So I think every season, or every episode is about 5 hours of work. And then we do 12 episodes, three sets of 12 episodes a season. And then we do that several times a year. So like now we're doing a podcast on top of it. So it gets, I work a full 40-hour week job, like you were saying. So I literally wake up in the morning, I work out, I go to work, I come home, and then I eat whatever's laying around the house. I catch up on YouTube and then I work until midnight and then I repeat.
If you can only get it up faster, like the hunger for content. When somebody was asking me, I was talking with a fan and they were like, would you do this for a living? I'm like, no, I have a 40-hour job. I'm what the Americans would call a greengrocer.
Yeah.
You know, I have the luxury of daydreaming at my job all day, thinking about how to, you know, go about something that evening or whatever. But there's wife, family, kids, elderly parents, you know, that all need your time and attention that, you know, really should and must come first before you get around to, you know, like, I'm sorry, this, you know, there's 3 week gap between these episodes, or, you know, we only have so many hours on a Friday or Monday or whatever, we can shoot this stuff. And, you know, the more shows that you're interested in bringing in. And like I said, there's, I really do have a genuine respect for someone that has a narrow focus that can pick one show, one thing they love and stick to it and do well. Or even if it tanks, they are seeing it through to the end going, guys, we did this. We had fun doing it.
Yep.
You throw it into the sea of podcasts that's out there, you know, and maybe you get a bite or two, but you know, like you did it to do it. So that's, you know, that's the kind you want to do. Myself, I'm stuck with the too many ideas too quickly. And we've spread ourselves really thin. Like you're running through a field, dropping matches, hoping that one of these will turn into, you know, a spark, wildfire. Apologies, Australia, bad analogy. Okay. Moving on. We talked about your merchandise. We talked about social media. And I've, unfortunately, again, for you, have snuck in several attacks of opportunity talking about my woes, our problems and everything. But that's the idea of the show.
It's your show.
It's a back and forth. Couple optional questions that you do not have to answer. First, personally, I find this interesting. And I do find our viewers and listeners find this very interesting. Nowadays, you know, the Closet Geek is out. And people are very interested, not just the stereotypes of the artists and everything that you'd expect to get into this. Ditch diggers, lawyers, doctors, people that shovel poop for a living, people that wash your car. You know, this is the most surprising book cover that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah.
You know, is into this stuff. So I usually like asking people, what do you do for a living? So, Michael, what do you do for a living?
You know, I am not. I am the stereotype. I work cybersecurity. I work on computers for a living. That's it.
No.
I am a nerd. I had an interest in computers when I was a kid. I built my first computer in like fifth grade. I took a programming language in like middle school. And then I joined the military in 2006. I qualified for like almost every job in the military. And at the time I said, what job works on computers? And they said, this one. Okay, so I signed up for that one job, and I've been doing it ever since in the Army. And then I have been for the last few years. I work cybersecurity, doing like, you know, hacky things, anti-hacky things, you know, network security for the Navy. And that's what I do. So I am the prototypical geek. I work on computers for a living, and I come home and play Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, I've just moved your logo because, you know, how did I bait this guy to be on the show? I said, we'll talk about your latest project. We're 40 minutes in and we're finally getting to the topic at hand. Let's talk about you shifting your focus from video to strictly podcasting, the Dark Fortunes podcast, which is being made by you and Unmade Gaming. And I have a lovely shot of you and your cast here. Tell me about Dark Fortunes.
So Dark Fortune. So I have been wanting to make a podcast for a hot minute now. We had, when we started our Patreon, we started ripping the audio from all of our shows and putting that up on Patreon as a pseudo podcast, and everyone seemed to enjoy it. And I've seen podcasting has taken off over the last like 4 or 5 years. It's had a steady incline, and I've been seeing a lot more tabletop oriented content on there. And I was, well, I already play tabletop games. Let's try to do some podcast stuff. And I've been doing it for enough years consecutively that I have a few friends in the industry that want to join in and help and have fun. And so we launched our first podcast. We recorded the first few episodes Monday. There's another one recording today. There's another one recording on Saturday. So we're recording a bunch of episodes. We're dropping this on February 10th is the very first episode to come out. That's going to be a big lore dump, so you can kind of get caught up on the world of Humblewood and our new homebrew portion of Humblewood. But yeah, we wanted to do a D&D podcast because everyone loves D&D, quote unquote. And we all cut our teeth on D&D. We all play D&D before. And in a space of tabletop gaming, when you say tabletop, people think D&D. And so for our first foray into the tabletop podcast section, we didn't want to come out of the gate with something crazy and like indie. We wanted to come out with something that kind of already had an audience, but a little tweak on it. We don't see a lot of pirate podcasts. We don't see a lot of Humblewood podcasts. We're like, let's combine those, push that out of the gate, and see what happens. So yeah, we're doing a Humblewood pirate themed podcast. We have an amazing cast of people. We have my friend Johnny as the GM, who's the essentially the GM in resident at Unmade Gaming. He's been a GM on Unmade Gaming for 3 years, like nonstop. Every season he's a GM, so every week you see Johnny.
I'm looking at the names on the billboard here, and it's like I don't see a Johnny. Which one is?
Oh, so Johnny is the center one on the billboard. That's Video Store Cowboy.
Okay.
Yeah, the black and white photo. That's my friend Johnny, VidStore Cowboy on Twitter. You can primarily find him on my channel. He's the GM for our Dark Crystal game and a litany of other games on our YouTube channel. We have V, who is V Muse. She's the crafting muse on YouTube. She is a GM for Cobalt Press. She is a player on one of the Nuraki games. She's a player on many Terrain Domains games. And she is a crafter in her own right. She has an amazing YouTube channel where she crafts all kinds of crazy terrain out of like household products and all kinds of awesome stuff.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of a fan. I follow her, actually. Yeah. I really love her content.
Yeah, she's a super amazing human being. She's such a sweetheart. We have Joe. His name is McLoken on the internet there. McLoken was a Twitch partner where he did like a lot of Twitch RP, which is they do like Grand Theft Auto or like Sea of Thieves, and you make your character like in a video game, and then you role play a character. So it's a server of just people role playing as their characters. So he kind of went on that, and he had his own show on like tabletop kind of stuff. And he's been a player on our channel for, oh man, like 2 years about. And so I love that guy, also a veteran. And I was like, come on, man, you're going to play this. We always have great chemistry together. And then the newest person on the show is a guy named Rory. And I found Rory in the most unlikely of places. I was scrolling through TikTok and I found him there. And he was making content about tabletop games. And he had made an original character to role play as in his videos, who was a Slytherin professor in Hogwarts. And he had great accent work. He had great vocals and he had like charisma and presence. And I was like, you know what, man, you like tabletop games. You seem like a cool dude. So I reached out to him and then now we're all making a show together. So we're all playing a jaunty crew of pirates who have no business being pirates.
That is awesome. I expressed earlier my love for Don Carnage on Tailspin, right? Just because you need a filler guy for a week.
We have only one of us is actually a pirate, which is V, the crafting muse. So she's actually a pirate. We have a skunk samurai who's like on the skunk version of Rumspringa. He's just wandering around and happens to get like curtailed into our crew. We have a barbarian 14 point stag I think he's a runaway and we just co-opted him onto the thing, and I am a fence. I'm playing a raven fence. And so yeah, we have a ragtag crew who has no business being pirates on the high seas, and here we are.
So you've got a stag barbarian, a raven fence, a skunk samurai.
Oh, and the captain of the ship is a fox. Yeah, she's a fox.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I love Kung Fu Panda. I just thought that was hilarious how they made the styles, tiger style, a tiger. Yeah. And I thought that was, that's really good. Watched all of them. You know, kids stop watching them after a second. I'm still watching them with my wife going, this is funny. This is good stuff.
You know? Yep. Yep.
Oh, that was very cool. So this launches in February.
Yeah, it launches in February, February 10th, as part of the Don't Split the Podcast Network. We're there with a litany of shows. So we'll be launching as part of that on Monday, February 10th. In the morning time, I think I want to say like 7 a.m. is my goal. But, you know, goals are there to be broken. So that morning it will release, and it should release every Monday thereafter for the next at least a year.
And this is audio only, or are you guys doing the stream version of pod?
No, this is straight up audio only. We are recording. We are recording we have our cameras on, but we're recording audio only. And that's it. There is no video portion. There might be like behind the scenes video clips of gaffes and silly nonsense that get thrown up on the Patreon, but there is no public release for video format. This is just straight up podcast audio only. We have an amazing editor who is my friend, who is actually the social media manager for Cobalt Press, Nomedic. And he is going to be our audio editor. He's our audio engineer. He's already thrown back some crazy ideas. Like, I reached out to him and I said, hey, man, the players all want to roll physical dice instead of use roll 20. Is that okay for, like, audio things? And his response, because I know how the clatter of dice on a desk table can peak your microphone and make it inconvenient to edit. And he says, yes, please give a brief pause before the roll and after the roll, and I'll cut it out and I'll edit in audio sounds of dice rolls that I'm going to make and record for you. And I was like, that is the most extra response I could ever, like, so he's super into this thing.
That's work, man. Cause yeah. You know, we were recording on roll 20 and it makes dice noises and they come in and like I said, it doesn't spike.
Yeah.
We've been talking with Michael Hunt from Unmade Gaming, who you can find a brand new podcast this February on the Don't Split the Podcast Network. And if you've been paying attention, there is too many credits to list for this guy. Like I said, look in the link below. If you are listening to this in one of our podcast formats, scroll down past the bio. We'll put the links in there. If you're watching this on YouTube or our stream later, by all means, you know, hunt for it and follow One Man's Journey from 5 years ago, because that's what I'm going to be doing this weekend and really get a feel for this guy and what he can do for you for free on the internet as a fellow content creator. Mike, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. This has been super fun chat. Glad to be here.
And we'll see you next time on Attack of Opportunity.